It is Thanksgiving Eve. It is the busiest travel day of the year. Traditionally, planes, trains, and automobiles. And we say good morning to our buddy Jason Cairns. Best 5 minutes today and the last one until Monday. Good morning.
Good morning.
The question could easily be this morning. Share with us a story of travel on a plane, train, or an automobile. Thinking of the Steve Martin, John Candy classic. But it instead is... share with us a favorite Thanksgiving memory or tradition. Anything for you?
You know, I look back to my childhood and particularly my teenage years. I loved to go deer hunting with my dad. And, you know, looking back on it now, 30 plus years later, it was really about the opportunity to just be hanging out with the guys. And I was never a particularly successful hunter, but, you know, for me, I think Thanksgiving Day spent with him was often good. You know, when I was with my mom, it was great as well because it's her favorite holiday every year. And so for me, I always have a lot of good memories around Thanksgiving.
You know, something for me, I mean, yeah. I can think different times. In terms of my family growing up, we lived on a dead-end street, 1510 Alice Street, from the ages of 8 to 18. But I think what stands out is when my parents got divorced, my dad, for the bulk of the time, moved to Rockford. And it seemed like for so many Christmas, Thanksgivings, this was the day I would make the journey, get to his house on, you know, Wednesday night, and other family arriving from elsewhere. And so... yeah, so missed that. He's been gone for 15 years, yeah. So missed that. So
yeah, yeah. The gathering, I think, is a huge part of it.
And a lot of times it was turkey, but you know there was the year we grilled steaks was pretty nice too. I'll tell you.
Yeah, I think I don't know if it was last year or the year before that I did that where I made a full prime rib instead of turkey for Thanksgiving, and that was delightful. I'll be honest.
That sounds pretty good. Well, you know what? I want to. This is our last one until Monday, and I was telling the listeners, I like what I do. I'm going to miss the show. I've already told Caleb and Susan, it's fun doing the show with them. I'm going to miss it Thursday and Friday. We'll turn it over to the capable hands of our new buddy, Josh Stream, who was a regular on Saturdays. But I want to share, folks, ask you to share something from our breakfast Saturday. I don't know what led to this, but we talked about the idea of... love and relationship and wholeness. Do you know what sparked that? Because I want you to kind of share that.
Yeah, I don't remember specifically what sparked it, other than that seems to be something that we talk about a lot.
Yeah, so just
you know,
hit
the idea of
maybe why those three things are so important to you here as we're heading into Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you know, I think a number of things. God, I think, is a God of love, and you know, has existed in relationship for all eternity. I think that's why we've talked about why the Trinity is so important, is that God has always existed in a community of love and invites us into the same. And, you know, for me, I think pressing toward a life of wholeness, which I think is one of our important tasks as humans, involves growing in love for God, love for others, love for ourselves, kind of love for all creation. And I think when we begin to understand that, you know, we live these fragmented lives, you know, in our thinking and in our emotions and in our behaviors, and God is inviting us into that. He's inviting us into that place of wholeness. He's inviting us into that place of love. You know, that, and he's patient with us as we go that way. It's not demanding moral perfection. It's an invitation into wholeness. And for me, that's so encouraging to think about that, particularly on days when I don't feel particularly whole.
And I think, you know, I don't know, it's just interesting that idea of whole and holy because, you know, I don't know. Tell me if you agree or disagree if you experience it. The word holy makes me feel pressure. But the word whole, it seems much more inviting to me.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the, you know, and sometimes I think that happens as we have good religious words that end up getting psychological baggage along with them. And I think, you know, holy can be one of those things. You know, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, really, holiness is wholeness. And I have a book with the title of, I think that's Wholeness is Holiness or Vice Versa. And, or Becoming Whole and Holy, I think is what it is. And to understand those concepts are deeply linked. But I think you're right, Mark. I think there's the idea that certain words, holiness being one of them, we have a lot of ideas about what that means, which may or may not be rooted in scripture.
Right. And yeah, if it wasn't for Larry Crabb, Larry Crabb kind of rescued it for me because he helped me see translated holy into a relational other centeredness. I'm like, oh, okay,
right.
That makes sense. You know, otherwise it just feels like this moralistic perfectionistic pressure.
Right.
So
completely. And I think that's exactly right. And that's good for us to wrestle with those things, to wrestle with ideas of wholeness and love and relationship and holiness and all of that stuff.
So bringing us back to close things out, heading into Thanksgiving, I mean, you're going to have family and friends, and there may be relational challenges. But mentioning Larry Crabb, I know one of my many but great takeaways from him is what matters most is treat others well, regardless of how they treat you. So how about that as a good reminder?
That's beautiful. That's a wonderful reminder going into the weekend.
All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. And we'll talk to you Monday on the air here. So.
Sounds good.
All right. Letters to the Beloved, also available for Christmas. Order on Amazon. His earlier book, Notes from the Upper Room on Jesus' Upper Room Discourse, John 13 through 17. You got the book, the devotional. We recommend them both. All right. We're thrilled to be joined on the line by the incredibly gifted Mitch Albom. You know him for so many things, as Sports Insights, Tuesdays with Maury, Finding Chica. His latest is just out, The Stranger in the Lifeboat. Mitch, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Good to have you aboard today. Hey, our question of the morning for listeners on this eve of Thanksgiving is, what's a favorite Thanksgiving memory or holiday tradition? Anything come to mind for you in that regard?
Oh, absolutely. After the food was finished and the desserts were brought out, my old uncles and aunts from the old country used to start in with their storytelling. And I had this one uncle whose name was Eddie, and he used to tell the same war stories all the time. But one of them was about a time that he died for like a couple of seconds on an operating table.
Wow.
Rose above the bed and saw all of his dead relatives, waiting for him. And I used to say, oh, what'd you do, Uncle Ed? What'd you do? And he said, I told him, get the heck out of here. I'm not ready for you. And that story became the basis of a book I wrote called The Five People
Five
You Meet in Heaven many, many years later.
I saw that coming. That is so cool. And it's amazing how our childhood memories shape our adult. Yeah, the child is father to the man, right?
Yep, I'm 100%.
Mitch, again, you've had millions of copies of your books sold worldwide, but what is it about each project that kind of reinvigorates you to dive back in again and write?
Well, I don't tend to write about plots. I tend to write about ideas. So there's no shortage of ideas that, you know, have messages and uplifting messages that I want to try to get across. The Five People You Meet in Heaven was about everybody counts and there's no such thing as a nobody. This new book, The Stranger You Meet in the Lifeboat, is one of my favorites. It's not my favorite because it involves a luxury yacht that explodes in the middle of the ocean with all these rich, powerful people on it. And 10 people manage to get to a lifeboat. Half of them are the guests and half of them are the staff. And they're floating out in the lifeboat for 3 days and there's nobody coming for them. They're running out of food and water. There's sharks in the ocean and they're crying out for help. And suddenly they see this body floating in the water and they pull it into their boat and it's this young guy, very nondescript, average looking guy, he's alive, and they start peppering him with questions and he doesn't answer, and finally one of the passengers says, well, thank the Lord we found you, and he says, I am the Lord. And it takes off from there, and it's a really interesting look at do we accept help when help comes, even if it doesn't look like what we thought it was supposed to look like or come when we thought it was supposed to come.
I'm only up to page 50 in the book, Mitch, but does it kind of bring out this disparity that your life is kind of borne out with all your work in Haiti? And I highly recommend Finding Chica as people read your books. But just this idea of kind of the sports world and the fame and the fortune, the athletes that you've been so close to, but then also the poorest of the poor in Haiti.
Yeah, well, I do mix those personalities in the lifeboat. You're right. And there are some of the rich people are thinking, well, this guy can't be God, you know, because he doesn't look like God and he doesn't act like God. He gets hungry. He falls asleep. He gets thirsty. And anyhow, my money's going to save me, you know. And the richest guys, even when they're in most despair, he yells out, you know how much money I made last year? You know, as if somebody's going to save him on account of that. But mainly I wanted to explore the idea of, you know, we cry out for help a lot in our lives. And we kind of expect help, it seems to me, to sort of arrive like we're ordering a sandwich in a deli. You know, like we know what it's supposed to look like. We know how long it's supposed to take. And if it doesn't come when we expect it to, we get upset. But my life, anyhow, and I imagine yours, it has been one of, you know, a lot of things that I thought prayers weren't being answered. And then 5-10 years later, you look back and you say, well, yeah, I didn't get what I wanted there. But if that hadn't happened, then this wouldn't have happened and this wouldn't have happened. And I wouldn't have met this person who I married. And this. So I guess it was the best thing that could have happened to me, right? Well, if it's the best thing that could have happened to you 10 years from now, it's probably the best thing that could have happened to you now. It's just that we want our help and our prayers answered exactly the way we want them. We don't accept that God sort of does it on God's time and in God's way. And that's kind of this idea in this lifeboat where nobody believes that this guy could help them. And he issues a challenge to them. They say, are you going to save us? He says, well, I can only save you if everyone here believes I am who I say I am at the same time. And that's pretty hard to do with 10 people of various backgrounds. So that was the idea I really wanted to explore in Stranger in the Lifeboat.
I have to say, Mitch, I bought the Audible book, started listening to it this morning. My husband gets up with me. He's listening to it. I have to go to work. He's like, well, can't you leave your phone so I can keep listening? And that's one thing, and he's quite a reader. The thing I love about your work is you're always asking us, but we're looking above. We're looking at the big picture. You know, what's above this temporal world? And like you were talking about, the answers to prayer, God's ways are not our ways. And I love how you use your creativity to help us to see God in a new way. It's a cool book.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, also to... you know, answer, I think, questions that, like, if I weren't on the phone or my voice disappeared and suddenly a different, deeper voice said, Mitch is gone, but this is the Lord and you've got 60 seconds. You can ask me whatever questions you want. I'm sure you would have some pretty good questions. And I tried to put those questions in the mouths of the passengers on this life raft as the things get worse and worse. And one of them, of course, is why do people die? You know, why does someone I love have to die?
Right.
And I went through that with our little girl, Chica, who I wrote a previous book about. We adopted her from Haiti. She had a brain tumor. And she lived 2 years when she was supposed to only live 4 months. Mm. And those were an amazing 2 years that we got to be a family here in America while we were searching for a cure. But, of course, when she died, I had a lot of questions for God, like, you know, how could you take a 7-year-old girl if you're a benevolent God? Why can't you be benevolent to a 7-year-old? And in the book, there's a character who kind of asks this God character the same question. And at some point, God character says, listen, I know that you cry when the people who you love on earth leave you, but I can assure you they're not crying.
Uh-uh.
And, you know, for me, that was sort of, I wrote that as much for me as I did for anyone who's going to read it, that, you know, we may cry on earth, but they're not crying where they are. Well, that's something that maybe gives us some comfort.
Mitch Albom, you've made me laugh and cry with your books. Tuesdays with Maury on multiple readings. The book, The Play, I've loved. Finding Chica, highly recommend. And the latest, The Stranger in the Lifeboat. I noticed, even though you're in Detroit, you still do the Sports Reporters podcast. You didn't mention Lions football as your favorite Thanksgiving memory. But can they beat the Bears tomorrow?
Well, they haven't beat anyone this year, so I guess I would be safe in saying it's not likely, but you never know on Thanksgiving around here. But generally, in Detroit, the Lions games are the kind of memory we try to forget on Thanksgiving, not the one we remember.
But, Mark, how can you ignore the fact that the detective in the story is LaFleur? Come on. The Packers coach.
There we go. Thank you, Mitch. Happy Thanksgiving.
Pleasure. Thank you,
You're
guys.
You're a national
Happy Thanksgiving,
treasure.
Everybody.
We love you.
Again, author Thank Mitch you. Albom, The Stranger in the Lifeboat, is his brand new book. Go out and get it and see what we're talking about.
It's the WIB Wake Up Show for this Thanksgiving Eve, busiest travel day of the year. Mark, Susan, and Caleb, good to have you aboard. We're asking you on the listener line at 715-396-1670. What's a favorite Thanksgiving memory or tradition?
Well, I love this question, and I'm hoping to hear from lots of listeners. I remember always my sister and I sitting in the back of the car going to my grandmother's, singing over the river and through the woods to grandmother's as we go. We literally would do that.
Yeah.
And then just walking into her house, hearing the voices of everybody, that smell, you know, the smell of the warm turkey and the pies. And, you know, those were the good old days. Didn't even know it at the time. Just what a gift it was to all be together at that time. And yeah. And of course, the wishbone, pulling the wishbone and trying to figure out how I could always win. Because, of course, that has an impact on your life if you get the biggest part of the wishbone.
Those little place settings, I remember, again, we would always make, they were almost like paper dolls, right? And so they're like the pilgrims and the Indians and male and female. And we'd, beforehand, whatever guests we had coming, we would color their little pilgrim or Indian and write their name on it. So I remember that. We'd always have the pilgrim hats, which with the fudge striped cookies and the marshmallow coated in chocolate. And so it looks like a little pilgrim hat with a buckle on it and such. And
I've never made that.
Oh, well.
This is the year I'm going to do that.
Yeah. And little things too. Usually a tradition in my family, there's three kernels of corn on each plate. Before we start, and to remind ourselves how the pilgrims at one point were down literally to three kernels of corn rations for each person there. And so it's something my dad started, where we go around and as we drop a kernel into the basket that's going around, we say something that we're thankful for, kind of a reminder of who God is in the lean times and in the fat times, the things when we're doing well. And another thing maybe that I remember even more this year, and I probably won't go at length, but there's different pies that everybody likes, and my grandpa always liked lemon meringue pie, and we don't have it anymore, but it's something that mom would always make that, and we're like, oh man, we don't like the lemon, it's too tart. It was for grandpa, and that was always something, you know, we knew grandpa was coming because there would always be that pie laid out for him.
Oh, sweet. I love that.
Sweet, yes.
And so I don't traditionally think of lemon meringue as a Thanksgiving pie, but of course Sarah Swenson made it. And now my conscience is bothering me that Zach said his favorite pie was blueberry. And I said, no, we're not having blueberry pie. I think I'm going to make one now. I love it.
We heard from Mike from La Crosse at 93.7 FM on the WIB listener line. Again, we'd love to hear from you as well. 715-396-1670. What are you thankful for this Thanksgiving? What's a memory that you have, something that you grew up with or something you do every Thanksgiving? What's a Thanksgiving tradition? We'd love to hear from you. Leave it in a voicemail at 715-396-1670.
Hi, Caleb, Mark, and Susan. This is Mike from Cross. My tradition for Thanksgiving, which I've done for years now, is go over to my friend Belva's and spend Thanksgiving with her and the family, since I don't really have much family members left. So, you know, I go over there and we go over to a place during the day to eat the Thanksgiving meal. And then we come back and then we eat later on at my friend Belva's house. We just all fellowship and watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade and watch football games. So that's my tradition that I do around this time of year. And God bless and happy Thanksgiving to you, Mark, Caleb, and Susan. Bye.
Shop, shop, shop. Deals, deals, deals. Black Friday's coming. Hope you get those good deals. I'm not sure when we change from being citizens of the world to consumers, but that consumerism has fully made its way into our culture. And I find myself anxious, like, oh, am I going to miss a good deal? So I was very intrigued, and I had this feeling of peace wash over me when I saw this headline. 99.5% of Black Friday deals are cheaper or the same price at other times of the year. This is Yahoo Finance. researched these things, and they said, you know, 99.5% were cheaper. 92% of these so-called deals were actually the same price or cheaper in the 6 months before Black Friday.
And the thing is, sometimes if you've been in line for a Black Friday, and I have at different times, whether it's at night or in the morning, I mean, sometimes it's really cold and you're out there and they've got a special great gift for the first 100 people and you're always number 101. You know, I'm like, oh, I don't get that wonderful bag. So,
right. Disappointment,
but it builds your hope.
And it's a temptation, isn't it? Like anything else, to not appreciate the beautiful Thursday we have that we've prepared for, that we're together. It's a temptation to think ahead and what are you missing? Mm-hmm. And it's so important to realize, you know, God is in charge of our money. He's in charge of what we buy. And if there is a deal there out there for us, no power of heaven on earth can prevent us from getting it if God's in control.
And then there was a whole trend, and maybe I think COVID had something to do with the cancellations last year, but then hearing that Target announced that they won't be doing this anymore, the trend to move Black Friday to Gray Thursday, which meant they had stuff on Thanksgiving. And having worked retail for a lot of years, I couldn't stand it. And even as a consumer, it's, well, I want to get the deal, but I don't want to go out on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And so maybe one of those bright spots of a pandemic year, Target said that they weren't going to have open hours on Thanksgiving because of COVID last year. And then they said, you know what, we're making it permanent. And
that's
I applaud them for that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And so many others who've started saying, you know, some of our advertisers, Stockman's Farm Supply and more, there's going to be great deals for Small Business Saturday. But they're saying Thursday, that's for family. That's for being thankful.
That.
It's not for consumerism. And I love that new and growing trend in retail.
Praise God. Yeah. That's what we need to do, is focus on Thursday, thanking God, being thankful for what we have. And then if a deal tumbles into our lap later on, that's from God too.
And there's always Cyber Monday. Okay. No.
You're fun. Yes.
The WIB Wake Up Show, 852, 43 degrees. Because this is our last day before the holiday break, a quick mention for you as well. Again, if you missed the announcement earlier this week, our friends from OneFest came by and let us know that Mac Powell, yes, the former lead singer of Third Day, he is one of their new featured artists. He joins Matthew West in the lineup, continuing to grow at OneFest 2022, end of July. So pretty cool. If you missed it before, there's a great deal for groups or families. All you need is four more people and take tickets are just $40 a piece. That starts Thanksgiving Day and goes through Cyber Monday. So just want to make sure everyone is aware of that. And now to the premier event.
Yeah, you know, ever since 2018 here on the WIB Wake Up Show, on this day before Thanksgiving, we've gone back to 1978, probably the best known television show about radio, WKRP in Cincinnati. There was news radio, but this one I think fared better, ran longer on CBS. What a cast they had. And so Les Nessman, really my model in news journalism. This is a classic radio promotion gone really, really bad.
All right, fellow babies, and now it's time to go to our live remote man on the scene at the Pinedale Shopping Mall for the big WKRP turkey giveaway. So take it away, Les Nessman.
I'm here with hundreds of people who have gathered to witness what has been described as perhaps the greatest turkey event in Thanksgiving Day history. All we know for sure is that in a very few moments there are going to be a lot of happy people out here. And I think I hear something now. The crowd is moving out into the parking area. And, oh yes, I can see it now. It's a helicopter. And it's coming this way.
A helicopter?
It's flying something behind it. I can't quite make it out. It's a large banner. And it says, Happy Thanksgiving. From W... Ladies and gentlemen, what a sight. The copter seems to be circling the parking area now. I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter. It's a dark object. Perhaps a skydiver plummeting to the earth from only 2,000 feet in the air. The third. There's no parachutes yet.
Skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but...
Oh, they're talking! Oh, Johnny, can you get this? Oh, they're crashing to the earth right in front of our eyes! One just went through the windshield of a parked car! This is terrible. Everyone's running around pushing each other. Oh, my goodness! Oh, the humanity! Oh, people are running about. The
turkeys are hitting the ground like sacks of wet cement. I don't know how much longer the crowd is running for their lives. I think I'm going to step inside. I can't stay out here and watch this any longer.
Children are searching for their mothers, and oh, not since the Hindenburg tragedy has there been anything like this. I don't know how much longer I can hold my position here, Johnny. The crowd...
Those of you who just tuned in, the Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live turkeys. Film at 11.
So Susan wasn't familiar with that.
I was not. That's hilarious.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, the turkeys are hitting the sidewalk like sacks of wet cement. Might be rough.
Really paints a picture.
And, of course, the famous line at the end, Halvo, from the promotions director, which is also a job that I hold here, but I've never done anything quite like this, is, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. It's a classic.
So good.